Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I'm going to do something different today, and there's a reason that I'm going to do that. Normally, I throw the bio out when I'm promoting people or I go through it during a show. This time, I'm going to read it, and there's a reason that I'm going to read it. I have the fantastic Betty Otter Thompson with me today, and her work has always gravitated towards media. She's a native Philadelphian with a BFA from the University of Pennsylvania. She's worked as an account executive for WFIL Radio in Philadelphia, and from there, she went to radio stations WPEN and WFLN. After that, she became a commercial print model and acted in television commercials in New York and Philadelphia for 17 years. Betsy worked in Los Angeles at the motion picture and television company Castle Rock Entertainment as the assistant to the chairman and CEO. In August of 99, she followed her boss to Warner Brothers as he took a new position there as president and CEO, and she became his executive assistant. The fortunate thing for us is that she's now writing full-time. There's a reason that I bring this bio up. I mean, for 17 years over that, she's been working with the media. And I think there's, I think of Warner Brothers Studios, I think of Castle Rock Entertainment, these huge companies, and I think of the stress and all the various situations and pressure you would kind of run across there. And that, I think, qualifies her to be the author of, what we're going to be talking about today is What Happens If I. It's a book I've read. It's a book that sheds a new perspective on your life and how you can improve it. But I'm already getting ahead of myself because I've not even introduced the fabulous Betsy Otter Thompson. How are you today, Betsy?
Hello?
I'm not sure if we've there you are, Betsy. I didn't quite get you there for a moment.
All of a sudden, it was nothing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, isn't it lovely whenever you come across those things? I trust you did hear your introduction.
I did. I heard it, and it was beautiful, and thank you very much.
Well, you're the one who worked hard for it. Now, specifically today, because I've read this one, you have so many books. You even have, you know, the one thing I didn't mention is that you also have four self-published books through your own company, Ascension Publishing. But I want to get to that later because I've actually read What Happens If I. And I think it, in the field, I don't even want to call it, it is kind of self-help in a way. But it's self-help that's unique today. And I say this because what you have accomplished with this book, What Happens If I, it's available on Kindle. You need to pick it up. The reason why is because it offers an entirely new perspective on how you can live your life in a better way. How would you describe What Happens If I, Betsy?
Well, I would describe it as what I asked myself. That book started, I got the idea for the book when I was coming home from work one day, and things hadn't gone as I hoped they would, and I was trying to figure out what I had acted out that had created the action that came back to me. And my first inclination was to, of course, blame somebody for the pain I was going through, and what I had to do was to ask myself, what had I given to somebody else that had caused that emotional action to come back to me? And then I realized that I was around a lot of people at the time who were trying to figure out these kinds of ideas, and I decided that what would it be like to write a book that had What Happens If I, and then had all these taglines afterwards, what happens if I do what I love but the money doesn't come, what happens if I withhold from others, what happens if I can't stay monogamous, and then to have the answer, what to do about that issue. And
you leave it all to the reader. You're helping them develop themselves.
Yes, that's the idea, because I don't think that anyone else can really make you do anything. You're the one who has to act out in a way that you want others to act out with you. In fact, I think that's the basis of all our problems. If we would only put ourselves in the other person's position and then treat that person the way we want to be treated, we don't have any problems because we're all one anyway, and so however you're treating another, you're getting it back. And this is how I figure out all my problems to this day. I ask myself, you know, what did I do? What action did I act out? And when did I do it to feel this? And what I do, basically, I go through a little exercise with myself, and I say to myself, okay, now what is it you're feeling? What emotion are you feeling? And it might be that I'm feeling that someone's been cruel to me, or I feel that someone's been patronizing to me. And so then as soon as I say that, then I have to ask myself, okay, now when were you cruel to another? And when were you patronizing to another? And if you're really honest with yourself, the answer comes up almost immediately because your soul is always trying to help you grow. And so the soul is gonna be there for you that minute. You just have to be honest about it. And as soon as you're honest about it, then you know how to act to heal the situation.
Right. And, I mean, the comprehensive amount, I mean, to me, this looks as if you sat down, you thought about just about everything someone can think of, literally. I mean, answer to hate, we're all going to come across hate, but as you say, we have to put that out there to get it back to us. But this is not, and I want to emphasize this, just because this is not the Secret, which was a runaway bestseller success, this isn't the same thing. I think what I took from this book is that I need to look at myself in depth. It's like therapy in between pages, you know, and you work up to all these situations that everyone, it happens to every single person. I mean, we all think we have to be perfect to attain our goal. That's one of your topics. And all of us want to sit around and do nothing at some point. But then, again, if we do that, what are we going to get back? A whole lot of nothing. So when you set out to write this book, did you keep yourself firmly in mind, or were you thinking about everyone out there who struggles with these issues?
I don't think you can write about anything unless you've experienced it. In some way, in some form. I think that you have to, I sometimes think that my life sort of explains, my work explains what I had to live first. I had to go through all these emotions myself before I was able to feel the answer to them. And you know, that's how we learn. We go through experiences and we think, well, gee, I'd rather not go through that one again. And so we don't try that again if it didn't work the first time. And I think I've been through all of these chapters. I've been through something that was appropriate for that chapter. So, and I feel like I have to say that I think that when I'm writing this, when I'm doing my writing, that I'm opening my heart to Spirit helping me, and that Spirit comes through me in a way that is wiser than I am. And, I mean, I think that I had to experience these feelings to be able to write about them, to understand how they feel, but I really do believe that there's a higher power that's helping me to share them with others, because I'm not so sure that when I'm speaking personally, I'm as articulate as what comes out in the book.
Oh, but I think you are. I mean, I think you really get your pure intent. You know, I was telling Betsy before we came on air is that I always look for intent, even with the people that I interview, and her intent is pure. That's all I want to see. I don't want someone who, you know, Betsy's not here hawking anything. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to wear a special bracelet to act on her advice. You can save thousands in therapy from reading what you say. And that, to me, is the purest intent of all. You've been through it. But then again, as I said to you earlier, pressure. You've been through enormous pressure, enormous stress, and those always make diamonds.
Yes.
And what you – it kind of reminds me of a book you have, The Mirror Theory, The Way to Inner Peace, Resolution, and Transformation, because you are the mirror.
Yes, you have your mirror in front of you all the time. You have your emotional mirror in front of you all the time. So when you are having trouble with a person, it is not about the person. If that person weren't there, it would be another person who is pretty much the same. So it isn't about trying to change the other person. It's by asking yourself, what is in this person that I can't stand? you know, what is it about this person that turns me off or that makes me angry? And then once you have identified what it is, then you are able to look at yourself and say, and how am I, why am I, and I, how am I attracting this mirror to myself? Where is the anger in me that is attracting this mirror right back to me?
Right, and it's perfect. I mean, it is, the foundation is working on yourself, but the perspective is eye-opening because you came up with some things I just never, it would not have occurred to me. And I think that's the purpose in any good book, is that you have to face things. They may not be pleasant, but you definitely have to face things to resolve them, and you can't look at someone else. That's what, if I had to say, I mean, there are so many things I love about What Happens If I, but one of the things that I really like, probably one of my favorite things, is it is at heart about personal responsibility. It starts with you. You need to examine yourself and maybe get away from the real mirror in your bathroom and start looking at what you're putting out there. And I am a person who is just absolutely, I suppose my opinion is that if some of the politicians, some of the corporate creeps, and I know I'm probably not saying that the way you'd like me to, okay, but if some of the people who wreak havoc in this world, who think of themselves first and don't really look inside of themselves, if they had access and an open mind to read what you're putting out there, we would live in a different world. That's a fact.
Here's the thing. You can't change other people no matter how much you want to. So because you can't change other people, you can only change yourself. And if you are a person who is coming from a loving place inside of yourself, you're not going to attract the politicians of the world to you, or the lying politicians. I'm sure there are good politicians out there, but they're not going to attract back to you energy that isn't compatible with yours. A lot of people have trouble with this idea because they think they're with people they can't get along with, and they don't think they're anything like them. But if they weren't like them in some way, they wouldn't be with them, because energy attracts like energy back to itself. Some people call it the law of attraction. I call it the mirror theory. Some people call it cause and effect. But whatever you want to call it, it's the pulling of energy back to itself.
I couldn't agree with that more, because, you know, what you choose to associate with says something about yourself. But here's the core. The core of What Happens If I is going to be honesty, and that is self-honesty, because a lot of people who do draw negative situations to themselves, there are people who kind of revel in it. But they don't necessarily look at the reasons why. I have 5 sons. So your mirror theory really works for me, because some of the things that irritate them the most, that irritate me the most, I know are because they're just like I was at that age. So I can then turn that into something negative and try and pound maybe a downfall of mine into straightening them out. But it's much easier to look at myself and say, all right, maybe I should have realized that they've gotten this, or seen what I'm reflecting out there, picked up on it, and now they're reflecting it back on me. So I can choose to do something about that. And that's empowerment. Is what every one of your books are about.
Yes, that's true. But now let me just suggest another thing, too, because, you know, your children chose to come through you. So they wanted exposure to who you were, or they wouldn't be your children. And they feel that there's something important to learn from being your children. And you don't know exactly what they're here to learn. You don't know exactly what their soul is interested in finding. You don't know what their lessons are. You can only know your own. And so there isn't anything you need to change about your children or want them to be different, because they have their own path, their complete own path, and their soul is knowledgeable about what they need. This was a biggie for me, because I finally realized that when I said that I thought I knew what my children should be living better than they were, I was really saying to them, your soul's a dummy. And that's impossible. How could the soul be a dummy? The soul is all-knowing. It knows exactly the journey that it needs. And so it has the person in the situation it needs to be in for the evolution it's interested in living. And so we aren't here to say, you know, to judge other people's paths, because we don't know what their paths are supposed to be. We only know what our own path is, and what we feel is our own path, and we can only control our own path. And it took a huge burden off me when I realized that, and I just let it go.
I was very fortunate in that what I tell my sons are, you need to be yourself. That's all you need to be. You do not need to be like me, because you do have your own path. I was fortunate to discover that fairly early on. And I chose, you know, what you're speaking of is exactly right. It is my experience. Sometimes, you know, my parents taught me more about how to parent by doing it in a less than positive reinforcing manner, and I thank them for it. I have no bitterness towards my parents at all, because they taught me how to be an efficient parent who encourages my children to be exactly what they are, no more and no less. But part of that is very much saying, being honest enough with myself to apologize, to say I made a mistake, and to say, look, you only need to be yourself. You don't have to kowtow to every adult around you. You have to formulate your own beliefs. You have to act your own path, and you need to walk in that path. It should not mirror, if you will, mine, unless you choose for it to. You let us, and what happens if I, you let us, the reading audience, choose what works for us and what doesn't.
Good.
And that's hugely important, because we can choose what to pick and take from it. But the beautiful thing about what happens if I is that it jolts your mind in a totally different direction than it might have gone. I mean, topics that you have, they're so varied. You even have, commit suicide. You have so many different topics there. I love the monogamy one. I think that was marvelous. Insist on agreement or disagreement. Seek revenge. All of that, they all speak to some area that almost every human being has experienced or is experiencing right now, and yet you can look at it and pick and choose where you want to go with it.
Right, that's true.
And, you know, what I would ask you is, because this is a book that really is very spiritually motivated in the best of ways and with the best of intent, did your spiritual journey, as it were, start early, or did it develop as you moved along in life?
When I was around 5 years old, I knew I could speak to spirits. And it was, my mother was always talking about her grandmother that she was very close to, and she told me all the time how much I looked like her. And even at 5 years old, I was having trouble getting along with my mother. So I thought that the fact that I looked like somebody she loved was the best idea I'd ever heard. So I started talking to her when I went to bed at night, and I heard a response. And I thought, you know, at five, I thought everybody did this. So I went to my sister, and I told her I was talking to my great-grandmother, and I asked her who she was speaking to. And that was the beginning of my wide awakening of how the rest of the world was going to react to my gift at that time. And so I stopped doing it. And I didn't do it again until I was in California, and I had almost become a bag lady. I had been blaming everyone else for my problems my entire life. Anyone I could find, I was blaming them for everything. And all of a sudden, I heard this idea through the Course in Miracles about taking responsibility for your life. And so I said, okay, I'm going to take responsibility for the gift that I know I have. And I remember saying a prayer. I didn't think of it as a prayer at the time, but I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to take responsibility for this gift, that I sure need a job to support me while I do it. And 3 weeks later, I had the job at Castle Rock.
Which is amazing.
So it was almost like Spirit said, okay, if you're ready, we're ready, so here we go.
Right, and I can, you know, I don't talk about my day job, as I call it, because I write too, but writing is not my day job. I don't talk about my day job on the Literary Lowdown very much, but I can back you up on that. I can say I had almost the same experience, except I had a twin brother who also saw what I saw. So it's eerie to me to hear you talk about when you were five. I was around the same age, and guess who I talked to? My grandmother as well. So, and I thought it was normal. I thought it was as normal as getting freckles in summer. So my mother and my grandmother, and going back quite a ways, we had people who were intuitive going back for generations. So it was a little easier for me in some ways, and yet it wasn't, because I did the same thing you did, in that my grandmother taught me everything that she knew, but my mother, who has the same ability, she rejected it. So, it's fascinating to me that you had it and that you came back to it. I think a lot of people don't realize that when you have certain abilities, you can always come back to them. But the interesting bit is that everything you've been through, getting that job, being down, being almost a bag lady, all of that, it really put polish on you, if you were. Whenever I say that you're a diamond, I mean that. But sometimes they have to keep going, undergoing that pressure. And what kind of made you take that leap into believing and trusting in yourself enough to start writing full time to help others?
I just did it because I was in a place where nothing I had tried had worked. When you get to the point where you're almost a bag lady, you know that you're not doing, that something has to turn around, or it's a sink or swim situation. And so I just sort of decided that, what did I have to lose? I mean, I had nothing to lose. I was down to the bare necessities in a one-room apartment and about to lose that. I mean, I was down and out. And I just decided that I would honor the gift and see what happens, because, I mean, I don't think everybody has to get to that point in life where they have to be that desperate, but for me, obviously, I had to get there before I was willing to honor it, and everyone's path is different. You know, everyone has their crises in their own way, but this is what happened to me, and then after that, when I decided to take responsibility for that, I started taking responsibility in other ways, too, and stopped blaming everybody for my problems, and then asked myself, well, you know, I was the one who got myself almost homeless. Nobody else did. And so I was the one who had to take responsibility for the decisions I had made. And when I started doing that, all of a sudden I started attracting people into my life who were also taking responsibility for their life, instead of the people who were always blaming, which is what I had attracted to me before. So as soon as I put out a different energy, I attracted back a different energy.
Right, and I have to tell you my experience, because obviously I do know a lot of legitimate fellow, spiritual readers, Reiki, psychics like myself, mediums like myself. I have to tell you that the misconception I think a lot of people have is that, and you obviously walk with and talk to spirit, a lot of people have the misconception that we sit around eating bonbons all day, and nothing could be further from the truth. So there are a few things I look for in people who are kind of qualified to talk about some of the things that you do speak about in What Happens If I and other books, and they have to go, without exception, all the legitimate, not the con artists, not the scam artists, but all the legitimate readers, workers with spirit I've known, they have always been through exactly what you're describing. I like to refer to it as a trial by fire, because that's what it is. In order to read for people, and in order for you to write for people, you have to be through all those experiences. You can't talk about them as if it's a hypothesis that you, the scientist, have actually just come up with. You have to actually go through it before you're qualified to talk about it. Experiences are the best teacher in this case.
Right.
So what you say
after
resonates with me, because it is a prerequisite for anyone who's hoping to reach other people in any way, for them to have gone through the experience themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a chapter that is really close to me in the book called What Happens If I Use My Sob Story to Manipulate.
I love that. I love the title. I loved it.
Because I think that's what I did for the first half of my life. And I really had to turn that expression around and to rephrase it and say, what happens if I manipulate to get my sob story? Because I think this is what we all do. We all come here with something we need to overcome in order to hit the other side, so to speak. And once I realized, started looking back over my life and asking myself, well, instead of looking at my sob story as ruining my life, how has it helped me? How has it helped me to grow? How has it, forced me to look at myself? And when I started doing that, all of a sudden I began to get grateful for my sob story instead of using it, the pity party. And
yeah, you use the strength, because that's the lovely bit. What you talk about and what you've been through, it can only make you stronger, and sometimes that's the shift needed in some people's perspective. I think some people look at it as like a plague of locusts rather than it strengthening you. The more traumatic times you go through, the stronger you become, the more you learn about yourself, about people around you, about the world around you, and what you can do to alter things to your best benefit.
Right. Yes.
And the interesting bit about it, it's not just what happens if I, you also have walking through illusion. Jesus speaks of the people who shared his journey. You have the mirror theory. You have you are what you think, make your thoughts delicious, and love human, how to be what you, who you love, and love parent, how to be the parent you hope to be. So you've not just stuck with what happens if I, you've also went out into every other area, I think, that affects a human being's life.
Well, that's the way it turned out. But, you know, I feel like I've been guided. I really do feel like I've been guided. And, you know, a lot of other people are being guided about the same ideas. That we're all trying to share the idea that we live in a world where we really are all one. I just think it's that we are always facing ourselves and other people. It's the secret, I think, to turning your life around, that you realize that that where you are is a gift, because where you are is where the growth is. And if you can find the growth where you are, then you will automatically move on. It's not like you have to strive to move on. You just automatically do, because if you're not mirroring the people with you anymore, you're not going to stay there. It's like oil and water don't mix. The oil joins the oil, the water joins the water. So if you have found the growth from where you are and you understand how you attracted it to you, your soul automatically moves you somewhere else for the next lesson that you're here to learn.
Right, but what I love about that is in the middle, in that explanation, it's also implicit that it's not always going to be a lovely time.
That's true, because sometimes you don't recognize your mirror right away.
Well, that, and I think you have to have a certain amount of negativity to learn to kind of slog through towards positivity, towards turning your worldview around.
Well, that's what happened to me, but I don't know that everybody's journey is exactly like that. I mean,
no.
I only know what my journey is like. Some people, and not everybody's goal is the same, you know. People have different priorities. They come here with different priorities and different reasons for being here. And so it's really about letting go and just being who you need to be and letting other people be who they need to be.
Right. And on that, because that's a great end point for us to go to break, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we will be back. And I'm probably going to ask Betsy a little more about the other books as well as her writing process, because everyone who listens to Lydia's Literary Lowdown knows I'm fixated on writing processes. We will be back in just a few minutes. You are listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown on WGGM.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, Join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister, bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. The first Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Arvel Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at arvelbird.com and get a hold of all of Arvel's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. Yeah, during the break, Betsy and I were talking about something that I think is very important as well. Because of the work that I do, more so than the work that Betsy does, and I want to clarify that by saying Betsy has What Happens If I, and you need to go to her site, which is BetsyThompson.com. You should follow her on Twitter. It's Betsy O. Thompson. You should check out her blog, her books, all of that. And I'm saying this because her intent is absolutely pure. We were talking during the break about coming out of the closet. That is something that Betsy had to do. It's something I had to do. Could you tell us a little more about that, Betsy?
Well, I come from a very conservative family, and they still do not really understand what I do. I'm not talking about my children, but my sisters and my mother at one time. They didn't get it, what I was doing. And because of that, I sort of had this feeling that I was embarrassed about what I did, that I could speak with spirit and that I could hear spirit and write about what spirit was conveying to me. And so I think I hurt myself without really meaning to, because I wasn't really myself all the time. And so then after I wrote Walking Through Illusion, I decided the time had come where I was just going to come out of the closet and be who I was and let the chips fall where they may. And after I did, my life became a lot easier because there was never any time where I had to pretend that I wasn't who I was, or I had to cover it up, or say it in other words that might be easier for people to hear. So I just am who I am, and if people like it, fine. If they don't, then fine. That's fine too. But I'm more comfortable.
There's a lesson to be found in that, and that is just that you overcame your fear, and it is also something very common. You know, as I said during the break, I'm always worried about people thinking that anyone who talks about spirit or communing with spirit or sending their message out into the world, I'm always worried people will be confused about that because it's not about raking in money. It's not, especially with you, all of your books, especially What Happens If I, it does not say, now you need to buy my instructional CD or you need to, you know, grab a dead chicken and run around during a full moon three times chanting blah blah blah. You know, it's not about that. You come forward, you came out of the closet to share your story and to help other people.
At this point, something I really want to say about this, because before I forget it, I believe that the gift that I have is the gift that I use to share the love in my heart, and I believe that everybody who is sharing themselves in some way, I don't care if it's through writing, through painting, through plumbing, I don't care what it is, if you are doing what you are doing in a loving way, Spirit is speaking through you in your way. And
right.
So that's why I don't want people to think that I have some special gift or that channelers have some special gifts. They don't. They just have the particular gift they need for the journey they're on. But the person who is making beautiful paintings, or their heart is coming from their heart. It's coming from the same place that every gift comes from. And they're all equally valuable. They're all equally valuable and equally beautiful in their own way.
Right. It reminds me of a time I got kicked out of a palmist office. That's right, I said it. My best friend and I went to see a palmist, and he tried to tell me that I thought I was something special. And shortly after that, he threw our money at us, and escorted us out because I told him, you should know better than anyone else. We cannot feel special. That's the last thing we can feel. We're no special than anyone else. The fact of the matter is that everyone has to go through a certain experience, and I believe everyone's born with a certain affinity towards that path they will walk towards. That doesn't make anyone better. You know, it doesn't make a janitor better than me. It doesn't make me better than the janitor. It doesn't make a doctor. You know, you can't live your life comparing yourself to other people, because really all you're doing is trying to elevate yourself, and then you have to examine why your self-esteem or confidence is so damaged that you feel the need to parade yourself up on a pedestal above others. Because the one guaranteed thing is, What Happens If I clearly demonstrates this. If you want to parade on a pedestal for a while, you might get away with it, but ultimately you will fall in order to kind of fulfill your growth potential. But is that how you would put it?
Well, I think that it's impossible to say one way of life is better than another, because
right.
Each way a person chooses is taking them where they need to go and doing what they need to do. And I don't even, you know, people say, well, what about the killer? What about the person who does horrible things? Well, each person who's participating in an event is there because the soul believes there's growth to be found from being there, whether it looks like it's the killer or the victim. They are there because, for some reason, their soul knows they need to be there. We are not qualified to judge that situation, because we don't have any idea what that spirit has been through before, or what that spirit is trying to understand, what that soul needs to grow through. We don't know. So how can we say that they're in the wrong place at the wrong time? They're where they need to be. And if you say that they aren't where they need to be, you're saying that the soul of that person didn't know what it was doing. And as I said before, that's an impossible equation. The soul is all-knowing. It has each person, each soul has its person that the body it's walking around in, somewhere where it needs to be. So when we can release that idea that something's going wrong, I mean, the only fearful idea that exists is that something is wrong. So we only need to find what is right for fear to disappear. So when we see situations that look like they're horrendous, I mean, for instance, just take this recent thing that happened in Boston. Well, you know, what happened because that happened? People united. People found out, people were given the opportunity to help other people. There was a lot of good stuff that happened because of that. And how are we to know? How can we judge that that shouldn't have happened when we don't really know what was what brought it all together in the first place?
Right, I can't. You know, this is one of the things that people don't necessarily get. This is one of the things I think that are harder, one of the hardest things for people to see and understand. And yet it's something I've tried to tell people many times from my point of view. Death is not what you think it is. It's an illusion, for one thing. And secondly, you know, the way that I view things, my perspective is yours. In other words, I know that people are at a certain place in a certain time, and they're going to learn from it.
Right.
Whatever the lessons are, it's not my place to judge and say, you know, whatever direction you go in is the wrong one. You're in the direction you mean to go in. And when a tragedy like this happens, then it is a tragedy. And that does not negate my prayers, my thoughts, my hopes and dreams for the people who are recovering from this instant, this awful tragedy in Boston. All of that is there. I do pray for them. I do watch the coverage. I do hope for the best. And I was cheering along with Boston last night when they apprehended the second they're calling him a terrorist. But there was, it brings so many people together who wouldn't ordinarily be together. It fosters a feeling of community that has been lacking in our entire world lately. I'm not saying it was worth it. I'm not going to say that. I don't think it was worth it to the people who are grieving the loss of an 8-year-old boy, the loss of their son who swore to protect and serve and didn't really get to follow through on that. I can understand their grief, and I'm with them on that. But by the same token, it's difficult for me because, you see, the other side of the coin is I'm a human and I'm a psychic. And the other part of me says, I know where that 8-year-old is today, and I wish that his family knew. And I know where that 25, 26-year-old policeman is. I know where he is today. And that makes it difficult for me because you wrestle with the human and the spirit, if you will.
Yes. Well, the way I look at it is that we're all here in the illusion, which is a temporary stopping off place, to live the exercises we came here to live. And we'll leave here and we'll go home and we'll come back when we have more lessons to learn, and we'll do the exercises for that journey. And while it looks like some of the journeys are difficult and hard and heartbreaking, I trust that the energy that is going through it is there for a reason.
I
have to trust that, because I have to trust that my own life, I mean, I can't trust my own life if I can't trust that other people are where they need to be. So
right. Not only that, but you have to have a belief in yourself and a belief. I think the one thing people who work, no matter in what way in our field, is that we have a certainty. I wish that sometimes people could get into the two brain cells I possess and see what it actually is, as opposed to the facade that fools many.
Well, you know, you can't call anything real if it can be here today and gone tomorrow. And everything in this illusion that we look with at our we look to at with our eyes is could be here and gone today, gone tomorrow. It isn't real. And when we leave here, we aren't going to take our religions with us. This is what I believe. We aren't going to take our religions with us. We aren't going to take our beliefs about this and that and the other thing. We're going to take the love we found from having those beliefs. So that's why I don't care what religion you are, where you come out, what you believe. It doesn't matter, because it isn't what you're going to take with you. But if you love what you believe, you love your religion, then you're exactly where you need to be.
Right. And I can't agree more, just because exactly what you say is exactly the way it works. I mean, that's it. What you take with you is who you are. You don't change. Your personality, your basic characteristics, the best about you does not change. But you do leave that behind because this is school. That's my belief.
Right.
This is school. That's all it is. You're taking really hard topics. There's no doubt every single person out there, their topics are different from mine, but that makes them no less difficult. And the
right.
thing is, you get summer vacation, and then you come back to school. But you get your degree eventually, and then you
can do your real work. Right. I love that, Lydia. That's great. That's a great analogy. I love that.
That's it. I mean, that's how I've always seen it. And once you know, I think the key is once you know, and you do get this across in What Happens If I, in my opinion, once you realize that you are in a school, that you are not temporary, you're eternal, but that for now you are in school, most of us have been to school. Most all of our listeners have been to school. You've been to school. You've taken a topic. You had the one you hate. You had the one you loved. But the fact of the matter is you do graduate
too.
At some point.
In school, you have different classes. You know, there's how many classes can you take in school? How many classes can you take in college? And the people who are interested in the same subject are in the same class. And that's the same way in life. People who have interested in this and one thing, they're in one class. People who are in something else, they're in another class. And there's no class that's right or wrong. It's just a class that is right for you.
Exactly that. And when you go back for your summer vacation, you really are kicking back and unwinding with friends and family around you. That's home. That's where we go to. You may not like school. You may not like work every day. But that said, if you know that you are in school, that you are taking certain classes, that you are in with people who are also taking classes, and you know that it's a temporary thing, it's only meant for you to learn so that you can graduate and go another level up, it kind of changes your view on what you can endure in the name of learning. It doesn't change the grief or the sorrow when a classmate leaves, but that classmate is leaving. They're leaving for that term. They are not leaving for forever. You will see them again back at home. You'll hang out. Maybe you'll go to the local swimming hole. You know, but it's not, you're not going to be separated forever. And the beautiful thing is these are things we know. And especially about you, Betsy, is it's not just beautiful that you know this. What's truly beautiful is that you seek to share it with every person you can find. I can't say that for myself. You have all these marvelous books that tell people what they need to know so that they don't fear and instead embrace their course, embrace the learning.
Right.
I think you're to be commended for that.
Thank you. I want people to remember nothing's going wrong. Everything's
the
way
it is. But it feels like it's okay to feel like it in the moment. You know, it's okay to feel like everything's going wrong. But I'll tell you what, whenever disasters happen, and God knows I am a walking disaster, I'm glad of that. It does not bother me because I know whatever difficult I go through, in a year or two, I can look back and say, okay, I know what class I was taking, and I think I just scraped out passing that class. You know, that's the worst bit is when you look back. Sometimes you look back and you think, well, exactly. That's exactly why that happened. I can understand it, and that's great. I don't want to take that class again. Please don't let me have to take that class again in this particular life. Thank you very much. Your request is not always honored, but you learn. That's
yes,
the important
you do.
Thing.
You're always learning something important. And if you aren't learning something important, you'll stay in the same situation until you do.
Right, which is all the more reason why I get in so many disasters because I just have to learn. And for me, it depends. If you see people who are, I have this selfish thought that there are some people who are drifting beyond me in their classes, and I just realize and appreciate the fact that, you know what, they can do that. It's not going to hurt me at all. I'm just a little more of a hard learner, but you have to encourage yourself and say, I may be a hard learner, but that means I learn the lesson with more finality. It's not something I'll forget or have to redo.
Well, and also it's just that each path is individual, and you can't compare what.
Right, you have, to, and that's your point, and I love it about Boston or some of the other tragedies that we've been going through is that it's their path, and we can't judge it, and we can't. You know, we're human. We can't be happy about it,
and
but
what do
we
know about
judge
our
path? Either.
what do we know about our own journey in the past? I mean, how do we know that we haven't been where they are and that we learned something from it? I mean, maybe they aren't the person we are today, but maybe they're the person we were before today. If you're
exactly. I mean, that's a beautiful way to put it, because most of us choose to be the bad guy. That's my opinion. I always tell people, I kind of do a disclaimer. You don't have to believe as I believe. I don't expect you to believe as I believe. I think they're inherent. There's a loveliness about being able to talk to someone in a polite, respectful way about difference of beliefs. But if you don't honor that, then you don't have to talk with me about it. I'm not going to keep going on and on about my beliefs. But the way that I view the world and the way that you view the world are different from how a lot of people view the world. And that's why I respect you for coming out and putting that belief out there in a book, because I deal with it on a more day-to-day basis with people directly. I think putting it out in writing is an incredibly just amazing thing for you to do.
Well, thank you. But you know what? I live my mirror just like everybody else, and sometimes I have setbacks, and sometimes I have to take a better look at myself, just like everybody else. And, you know, I'm learning, and I'm no different from anybody else, and that I have my mirrors show up when I need to look at them. And I try to remember the beautiful mirrors as well as the ones that are struggling, so that I can.
Well, we all have bad hair days, don't we? I mean, that's what I think. When I think about looking in the mirror, I think, you know, we all have bad hair days.
Yeah.
And we all have good hair days as well. If you can hold on just to the fact, the thing I reiterate to my clients is just, if you remember it's a school, you can get through it knowing you have summer vacation to look forward to or home.
Yes, absolutely.
You just have to do it. There isn't
a
kid, there's not a choice. You have to go to school every day.
But I believe that we choose to come here on our, I think we're, our own energy decides that it's the right place for us to be at the right time. And
right.
So I like to trust that my soul is wise and has chosen what I needed. And I feel like I've learned a lot, so I'm not going to regret a minute of it.
Well, yeah, you're doing better than me. Because I don't regret a whole lot. I just think, if only I would have learned a lot sooner.
Well, what's wrong with your schedule? I mean, your schedule is yours, and it doesn't need to be like anybody else's, Lydia. It's perfect for you.
No, I don't look at other people. I only look at myself and say, good Lord, woman, really? You really? You did that again, huh?
It's
yeah.
Perfect.
But it works for me. I think self-deprecation is an art form, and it's the only way I'm ever going to be labeled an artist. I really do think that you need to keep a check and balance no matter how hard you work, no matter where you are in school. It wouldn't matter if I was going for my PhD. I still think it's important to be humble. And the reason why, and I'm not saying I'm going for my PhD, look, I can barely color inside the lines, people, if you know what I'm saying. What I mean is I'm not going to get thrown off course if a PhD comes in and wants to kind of interact with me. But I do think I have to be very honest with myself and say, look, okay, you messed up. You have another chance. Let's do it right this time. I don't think looking at yourself and seeing your flaws in a clear view, I think it goes exactly with your mirror theory book, to be quite honest.
You don't have to worry about finding your mirror. It just shows up. You
right.
don't have to worry about whether you've learned what you wanted to learn or you needed to learn, because if you haven't learned it, your mirror just shows up.
Right, but I believe in your book promotes to really look at yourself. I don't look at other people. I don't compete with other people. It's not other people I'm competing against. I compete with myself. And what I mean by that, before you get telling Lydia, hey now, don't get too stiff on this, Lydia. No, what I mean is, I think it's very important to be able to say to yourself, look, okay, maybe you're getting jealous that, say, other people are being published before you are. You need to take a step back, Lydia. You need to realize that there's a reason maybe you don't have an agent or you don't have a book deal right now. Maybe you have a lot further to go. Maybe you need to work more on what you're revising or what you're editing. Maybe you need to read more information, but you need to kind of stop with the jealousy towards other people and realize it's your path and you need to back down. I'm not to the point that you are where I can just kind of let go and let be. I'm not really that kind of person. That, again, brilliantly illustrates your point about be yourself. You know, it's your path. I just like people who can say, okay, I'm not perfect. I like to be able to look at myself and say, here are your flaws. You can either fix them or you can let them be and live with yourself on account of them.
All the things you said you went through, I've been through too. All those feelings that people were getting doing better than I was and people were getting published faster than I was and all that, I've been through all that too. And I finally just said, you know, I'm just going to do what I can do and trust that it'll flow the way it's going to flow because I got caught up in that somehow I wasn't succeeding if I wasn't successful in the picture.
Right.
And that's where that awful feeling comes in when you get caught up in the picture. When really I don't think our journey has much to do with what's happening in the picture. It's how we're dealing with the picture we have.
Exactly.
That's what we're here for.
And I'm over that. I mean, I've experienced it. I've wanted to rail against agents who've rejected me. I've been there. Okay, I have. But there's no point in it. It's counterproductive to my time when I could be editing, revising, pitching other people. It's counterproductive to be jealous of anyone because you're not walking their path. They're not walking yours. You're walking your own.
Right.
That's it. But it's going to happen because we're human. And that's what, you know, that's where I get into, and I wonder if this ever happens to you, if you get in a war between, you're kind of walking in one world, the earth, and then you kind of have your foot in another dimension, if you will. Do you ever find any issues between being human and then communing with spirit?
I have the constant reminder of what being here is all about. And the constant reminder comes in the fact that the illusion is not real, and anything that's happening in the illusion is temporary. And when I review my journey, it's going to be about where I loved and where I didn't love. That's what I'm going to be looking at when I leave here. And so that's what I need to focus on. And so I keep reminding myself of that, you know, where can you find the love in what is happening? Because that's what you're going to take with you.
Right, and you do get to review your life. So, you know, that's one of those things. It helps me look in my actual mirror every day. I know I'm going to have to look back and decide. I'm going to have to look back at every moment of my life, and it's what I've done to other people that's probably going to bother me the most, or what I've not done when I could have done more. So, you know, once you have that concept down, when you look in that mirror, be it figurative or literal, you're literally thinking about the impact that you have on every single person and what you're going to think of it when you get to look at it later. And some of mine are not going to be pretty pictures. The important thing is I realized that at some point, and hopefully I made some progress. Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
Well, I can't sit and claim that I have, because I think that's counterintuitive to what you describe needing to be done. I don't know. I think you're more gentle than that. It's suggestions to figure out your life. That's what happens if I is. It's suggestions to improve and enhance your life. Once you understand the design, you can paint your own picture, your own portrait.
Your own emotional portrait.
Right. And stick to that. And
yeah.
You can never go wrong. You know, you're not meant to be happy for other people. You have to stick. You know, I always tell people I have to look in the mirror every single day and decide if I like what I see or not. I'm the only person who can determine that, and so are you.
Yeah, we can't always control the picture of our lives, but we can definitely control how we feel about the picture.
Right, and your proactive approach. I think you have a proactive approach in what happens if I. It's proactive. It's not reactive. It's not, you know, we've read some of the titles here, you know, and honestly, it's not so much. It comes across as, okay, say commit suicide. It's a bit of a dramatic example, but it will do because it's suggestions. It's telling you to be proactive before you get to that point, to be proactive, not to be reactive.
Well, I, if we had time, I just want to share that somebody came to me in California and told me his brother was going to commit suicide, and he said, would you speak to him? And I said, sure. And so he came over, and he told me his problems and everything, and I said, well, you know, if you commit suicide, the problems aren't going to go away because the problems don't have anything to do with the picture. The problem has to do with your heart and your growth. And you're
right.
Still going to have that growth if you commit suicide. So since you put a lot of planning into coming here, and you picked what you thought was perfect, why not try to stay and work it out here rather than going leaving and then having to come back again? And
exactly.
So So you stayed.
Exactly, and that's exactly right. You know,
yes.
I could talk to you all day, but unfortunately time is ticking down, and all I can do is say thank you so much for coming on, and I hope that you will agree to be a guest again in the future.
I would love to, Lydia. Thank you so much. It's been really fun. Really
oh,
great.
Thank you. So appreciated. You know, right now, I have to say, I'm really looking forward to next week because I'm going to have the lovely Daria DiGiovanni on. I've had her on the show last season of Lydia's Literary Lowdown, which I can't even pronounce. I've had her on before. I'm looking forward to talking to her again. I mean, she does copywriting, website content, e-proposals, RFP writing, blogging, book editing, social media. She has a book, Water Signs, A Story, Love, and Renewal, and she hosts WriteStream, which is a wonderful broadcast that also deals with everyone in publishing. I don't know where she gets time to do all of this, but I look forward to finding out. We will have the lovely Daria DiGiovanni on next week. Don't forget to check out What Happens If I by Betsy Thompson, Otter Thompson, and check out our website, BettyThompson.com, or follow her at Betsy O. Thompson on Twitter. Everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.